3, 2, 1. Welcome to the world's greatest podcast, better known as Courtside with Greenberg and Dokich. I'm Seth Greenberg. Today on the podcast, Dan and I are looking back on the weekend. And of course, we'll share our thoughts on the passing of Kobe Bryant. Later, Bruce Pearl, head coach of Auburn Tigers, will join us. He fills us in on how he has built this Auburn basketball program as a beast on the plains, as game day comes to the plains. Before we get started, I want to remind you to subscribe and rate and review the podcast wherever you're listening. It really helps us and helps other people find the show. And you know, the best gift you can give anyone is to tell them about the world's greatest podcast. Also, tell a friend about the world's greatest podcast. Tweet us using the hashtag Courtside. We bring it every week. We're real. We have great guests. And what else can you ask for? You really can't ask for much more. And that's why it's the world's greatest podcast. Also, check out this week's Woj Pod. Woj and Ramona Shelburne share their memories of Kobe Bryant and discuss what he represented. There's obviously been an outpouring of grief and remembrance from the basketball community in the wake of his death. These two have been around the game for a long time and know Kobe in a different way. They are most definitely worth a listen this week. Download and subscribe to the Woj Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, before we get started, let's talk to about our friends at Vivid Seats. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band or being in a crowd to cheer on our favorite team. With Vivid Seats Rewards Loyalty Program, you can attend the contest or show of your choice and earn credit towards your next live event. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all live events. You can sort by price or you can look seats in the section you want, the row you want, your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back. All you need to do is use the Vivid Seats app to purchase tickets and start earning today. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. And when you make your next purchase, enter the code ESPN25 for a 10% off your next order. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theaters and shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join the Vivid Seats Royalty Program today. And don't forget to use the promo code ESPN25 for 10% off your next order. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get your favorite seats to your favorite live events.
For the win! Yes! Yes! At the buzzer, McCord on its way! Oh, 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 oh my goodness! Oh!
They have to get it. No timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokich, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside. But you know what? It's not Courtside. It's the world's greatest podcast. It's not definitive. It's just the greatest. It is called Courtside. It is with Greenberg and Dokich. We take you behind the ropes, inside what's real about college basketball. But Dan, what we're talking about today is much more real than college basketball. It's obviously the passing of Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and others that just tragic accident this past weekend, and it's impacted so many. And the thing I think about is it's Kobe, it's Gianna, it's these other families. It's not just these two people. It's these other families that have lost parents and sisters and fathers and uncles and aunts. And it's hard to wrap yourself around it when you've grown up trying to do things with your children and have those shared experiences, and then it's just taken away so quickly. And it's been hard. I don't know about your kids, but my kids have really been impacted by it because of some of all the things we shared through sport, and just kind of makes you reflect on a lot of those things. So what's your feeling about it?
You know, Seth, this is just me being weird. I always think about the last moments, like how horrible would it have been to have been all those people, baseball coach Altobelli, with his wife and his daughter, those last seconds, telling, you know, other siblings what, and Kobe case, his wife and three other daughters, hey, this is what happened. The last moments of Kobe holding his daughter, as you know, there's got to be a moment, yeah. You know, you're going down. I think of those things and it's terrifying to me. It really and truly is. And I know that I don't think for you or for me, Seth, it takes a tragedy of somebody else to remember to hug your family and all that stuff. But I will say this. I went to church, and there's a pastor named Aaron Brockett. And I went to church Sunday morning with my wife and my daughter, and he was concluding a series, and it was called Screen Time. And this wasn't a judgmental thing. He was basically – the basic premise of it was, is your phone and social media and basically things that don't matter using you, or are you using them? And it was fascinating to me. And I was talking to Lee, my wife, after the Kobe thing, and she's like, you know, it fits right in. We spend so much time dealing with, you know, in my case, some fat guy from Linton, Indiana, or some guy on Twitter that doesn't matter, or some guy here, some guy there. Instead of, you know, if you put the energy that you put into things that don't matter into the people that do matter, what a difference your life would be. And personally, I'm going to try to do that. I really am. In fact, the last 2 days, I have put down my phone. I've actually put it in another room because it just the whole thing the 12 hours or the 6 hours between listening to Aaron Brockett at Traders Point Christian Church and then what Kobe had, it hit me like that. And I was talking to my son and my daughter about it, and you know, it's. I don't think you or I, because we're present in our kids' lives, I don't think we need to be reminded to hug our kids, but I do think sometimes we need to be reminded to focus on what's important and not what's completely, totally unimportant in our life. Arguing with somebody on Twitter, just stupid. You know, there's a study that basically says if you get off Facebook, you're happier. Just simply getting off. Don't be, that's amazing. So anyway, there's my take.
That's a great point. Now, you know what? That's an incredible point because, you know, what do you value in life? You know, you value the ones that you love. You value the ones that, you know, that are most important to you. And yet you get sidetracked by things that are so totally irrelevant and perspective. And, you know, the hard thing, you know, not hard thing, but the thing that goes back to, you know, you've done it, I've done it. When you live in this world that we grew up in, say, your kids are part of it. Your kids are part of it. They live it with you. You know, in a lot of ways, they get lost in what you're doing as much as what they're doing. And, I mean, all three of my girls, they talk about, you know, Dad, think about all the trips we made. You know, me in the back of the car, going to see a prospect, driving 5 hours, driving back, or... You know, the looks you get with your children when you're sharing something with them, like those pictures of Kobe and Gianna and the way she looked at him. And what you said about those last moments, I mean, you just, that's what woke me up the last two nights. I mean, to be honest with you, you know, just thinking about how do you rationalize that? I mean, like, if you know it's happening, like, you almost hope that the fog was so bad that it was, and the helicopter was going so fast that it, you know, it happened rather than all of a sudden, you know, it eventually happened, you know, the process of it, but that neither here nor there. It is it's a great lesson for all of us to learn to prioritize things that are most important to us and put aside the things that really have no real impact on our happiness or the people who we loves. Who he loves happiness. So I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it does. And look, I mean, I don't know how this is going to sound, but I'm so happy that my father 5 years ago, 5 years ago this coming April, I'm going to say it no other way, just simply dropped dead in a Tesla store. I mean, he didn't suffer for years. He didn't, you know, he just, you know, and I'm so happy about that. But, you know, Kobe touched so many lives, and I do think the fascinating thing of the last few days is how many touches. And people, everybody has flaws, and everybody can go back to, you know, Colorado and Denver. And I get that. I totally do. But I also think that this is a guy in my world, and what I looked at, that impacted so many people, had such a hold, I thought, post-basketball on what he wanted to do and who he seemed to be. And, you know, look, I mean, we could all judge, and we will, and I'm sure, you know, there's already been, and in the coming days, people will bring out flaws. But, you know, at this moment, I choose to just simply say, man, it's an incredibly tragic thing for him. I can't imagine, you know, his wife, the Altobellis, all the people that were on that plane. The impact is forever, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, really, because it's not just about Kobe and John. It's about everyone who was on that plane and their families. And, you know, but Kobe is who, obviously, is the center of attention. And, you know, when you think about him, to me, his passion for the game, his work ethic, he had incredible basketball IQ, a competitive spirit, you know, the ability to just really grind at a level that very few people do. But also, to me, he took that same attitude in his post-playing career of trying to start a second life. And he approached that second life in the same manner he approached basketball. And that's the thing that, to me, blows my mind. It's, you know, he approached basketball like a, you know, with a ferocious passion and love and drive to be the very best. I mean, you know, you talk to former players. I talked to Brian Russell, who played with him with the Lakers, and, you know, Brian was older than him. He said, Coach, I learned so many lessons from Kobe. It's unbelievable. It's just, you know, his approach, how smart he was. He would tell us everything we had to do on the floor because he put in so much time that you didn't want to let him down. But he said when he got out of playing, he said, Coach, you would talk to Kobe, and he was putting that same energy, that same passion, that same to his children, to his new profession, to his new life. It was almost like he put that first career behind him, and he basically took all those energies and put it into his next post-playing career, which is, you know, let's face it, that's not an easy thing to do for a lot of athletes.
No, it's not, man. I wasn't the biggest Kobe on the court fan, you know, whatever. But, yeah, man, when you talk to anybody that's ever been around him, there's never been anybody that worked harder. I mean, there may be guys that worked as hard, maybe, but never as many, you know, nobody worked as hard as that dude. There are legendary stories about guys showing up to work out with him at 10 o'clock, and he's already finished his second workout or first workout by 10 o'clock. And it was crazy. And you know what? You just hope that everybody, you hope that everybody in their media circle that's affected, you know, you just hope they can continue on, and you hope that, actually what I hope is that everybody's young kids, whether it's, you know, his daughters or everybody else that's affected by the young kids, can move on at some point and have great lives. I worry about the young guy. You know, it's funny. You get old enough, and you've been through some stuff. You know, you get fired. Heck, my kid, you know, fired twice, divorced. I mean, you learn that. Hey, man, you just keep going. But I don't know if you learned that as a young kid. So,
yeah, but you know what? You keep going. But you keep going. But as you and I both know, you keep going. But the impact it has on your children.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It is so significant. Like, you know, you immerse yourself in something else, but when your kids are that age, and you know you got let go. I don't know how old Andrew and the kids were, but I mean, you know, it's a hard thing. The microscope, and our kids were under a microscope, but nothing like these children and this family is going to be under, and how public it is. You know, they live different lives, and it's brutal, absolutely brutal. Yeah. So. We're going to have Bruce Pearl on today, who has a little bit of a big game coming up against Kentucky, where he sent me the map of their arena today. And they're selling standing room only seats. I said, that's good. I'm sure you have an attendance clause in your contract.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. But, let's, you know, just real quickly, let's, you know, just impressions of this past weekend and, you know, even yesterday. How about Carolina getting that big win against NC State? Anything that resonated with you this past weekend?
Yeah. Am I thinking Carolina is going to make a run here, Seth? Am I thinking that they are a team that went through some stuff? I'm not saying they're back. I'm not saying that they're going to win the ACC or all the stuff that people immediately put on you. All I'm saying is Carolina, I got eyes on you, Carolina. I got eyes on you, and I'll tell you why. You go through all this, right? And here you go. You win two games. You blow out, really, Miami. That's not close. I know Likes didn't play and all that. And North Carolina State, rivalry game. We all think the world of the coaching staff at North Carolina State, and they control that thing from jump. Seth, I got eyes on Carolina. I'm not saying they're NCAA champs. Tell you who else I got eyes on, and they may be NCAA champs. I got eyes on Kansas. I mean, let's go. You know, we all want to bash the Blue Bloods. We all want, they're not any good. They're not this. They're not that. Well, I thought last night the two Blue Bloods showed why they're Blue Bloods. Down. You know, we're not this. We're not that. We don't have this. We don't have that. Yeah. All right. Let's go on the road and let's win and win easy and big. I got eyes on those two teams, Seth Greenberg. I got eyes on them.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about Carolina. The two big guys are playing really well. I mean, Garrison Brooks.
Yeah, they are.
He's playing at a really tough level, high level, and obviously Baycott's starting to get a little bit better. And boy, he's a good passer. And Brandon Robinson, I said this at one of our halftimes this weekend. I said, Brandon Robinson, you get those three guys playing well. Robinson played through some injury yesterday. You know, their ability to, if Cole Anthony does come back, can he elevate anyone else? I don't know. Can they make a run? Reese had a great line. I'm not sure they can make a run, but they're starting to walk.
Yes,
and that's, right. That's a great line. Yes. I mean, I said, RD, that's good for you. And then you've got Kansas. Kansas could be an elite defensive team. They're better when they play small. I thought Oklahoma State had changing their defenses yesterday and kind of matching up out of the zone, bothered them for a little. They get McCormick back. So they're going to have some front court depth, which will help them be a little bit more aggressive. But, you know, I think Kansas is good. I'll tell you the team that's impressive to me, and that's Iowa. They showed some grit yesterday. And, on both sides. I don't understand the Kobe King thing. I don't know what's going on. But I just know Iowa, who couldn't throw it in the ocean, was 1-for-14 or 2-for-14 at one point from the three. You always question Iowa. You know, they pass the ball, they cut hard, they run good offense. Are they tough enough? To me, yesterday, can they get stops? Are they committed on the defensive end? And yesterday, to me, they showed a grit about them. And, obviously it starts with your guy, Garzilla. But they've got guys that have a little bit of an edge to them. And this is an Iowa team, and I know the gauntlet of the Big Ten, and every game is brutal. They have an edge to them, yet there are two teams in that league that, in my opinion, have lost their edge, and that's Michigan and Ohio State.
Well, let me go to Iowa first. My man, Garzilla, Luka Garza, goes for 21, 6 offensive rebounds, Seth Greenberg.
Crazy.
And 18. You know, Wieskamp looks like the kid next door, but I think he's a bit of a killer, good. Seth.
Oh, yeah, he's a killer. Man.
Joe Frederick's nephew. I don't know if you remember Joe Frederick. He was a good player at Notre Dame for Digger. Well, Charlie Frederick, his dad, played a bunch of places too, including Davidson, and his son is really good. They have a toughness. You're so right. I don't ever think tough, grind it, Iowa, but they were last night. You know, Seth, I'm watching that game, and I was with a couple of our producers and directors. And I looked at Bart Fox, my producer. I go, hey, man, has Iowa made a three? You know, they end up shooting.
They shot them, but they didn't make them.
Yeah. They're like 3-for-20, and they're losing, and then they come back, and we both, we do Big Ten games. We care about the Big Ten. We're like, damn, that's on Iowa-like. And they went to the free throw line. Garza's, look, I know Jay Billis and you guys on game day have talked about it. He's the most underrated guy. I don't know about underrated, underappreciated guy. And truth is, if you like ball, and I assume you do if you listen to this podcast, my man balls hard.
Hard. Like, hard.
Hard.
Every aspect, runs the floor, fights the position, chases rebound, throwing his arms all over the place, plays the contact, sets screens. I mean, he's all over the place. Garzilla, that's my guy now, I'm telling you.
I got Michigan tonight. It's Tuesday when we're taping this, and you know, Xavier Simpson suspended. Livers has been hurt. I think he's going to play, but I'm not sure. I agree with you. I'm not sure, Seth, whether Ohio State, they got a road win at Northwestern. That's great. I'm not sure that that means that they got their edge back. I don't think it does. You know, it's one of those deals, Seth, until further notice. I think Indiana has a nice edge to him. Had a chance to have a great week. Jackson Davis missed a shot at the buzzer. They would have beaten both Michigan State and Iowa. Now Indiana's got to go to Penn State and then Ohio State. And Ohio State has the entire week off. So I'm curious how that's going to unfold. But I'm telling you, Seth Greenberg, you're going to go see Auburn. And I just did their game. I don't think they're great, but I think they're damn good. I think Auburn...
Oh, they're older and mature and got a grizzle to them and an expectation and a you know, I wouldn't say a competitiveness to them that Bruce's teams have.
Yeah. Right?
Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's like Bruce's, and he's got that big guy, Wiley, who's a big guy. And Okoro is, you know, and NBA guys aren't as high on him as I think we made on the broadcast. NBA guys seem, I was sat on a plane with a couple of them, and they're like, he doesn't shoot it great, but I'll tell you this, he's tough as hell. I think you have, Saturday with game day, a hell of a ball game. I do.
Oh, yeah. How about Kentucky, what they did at Texas Tech?
Yes.
That environment was crazy.
Are you buying Kentucky?
I'm buying them. Yeah, I am. And you know what? Sometimes, you know, they lose Whitney, who is, you know, a prospect, a suspect or whatever, but it bring, you know, those type of things sometimes bring a team closer together. Look, they won the other day in a really tough environment, and Tyrese Maxey didn't even show up. I mean, I mean, like buying them what? I mean, like, I don't buy anyone right now. I mean, I think there are teams that are a little bit better than others. I think Kentucky's one of those teams. I think that.
Are you buying them, you know, getting better and better and better?
Yes. Yeah. I am. Yeah, I am. I'm buying them there because, like, you can see our guy, the most improved player in America. He just took a year to get there.
A year late.
But it was great, great, great forecasting. I look at our guy, and you saw the greatness in him. I look at our guy, and I see confidence. Like, that middle penetration, and he slid out to the baseline and knocked down that 15-footer. Let me tell you something. That was confidence. Step into the line. Like, he wanted to step to the line. If you get him going, I like what John's doing with Sestina now, curling off of him, popping him. They're figuring out how to get him a little bit more effective. They're getting more different guys on different nights. I think they've got a terrific perimeter defensive team. I think it'll be challenged this week with McCormick and with Shamir Dowdy and Okoro. I think it's going to be good. We are in for a great environment. And in that tone, we need to invite the Barnum and Bailey of college basketball.
Oh, jeez.
The one, the only three-ring circus in himself, straight off a Final Four into college game day, and with a team that is old and tough and evaluated up, our good friend, coach-to-coach, Bruce Pearl. Coach Pearl, welcome to the show.
Seth, Dan, great to be with you guys today.
Go ahead, Dan.
Really, college basketball. Boy, I've been called a lot worse than that.
I know. I mean, come on. I mean, it's going to be a show. I mean, standing room only to sell spots for this game this weekend doesn't get any better than that.
Coach. No, it doesn't. And you know, guys, we all know, you know, having lived it on both sides of the street, you know, you work, you know, hard to develop the program, and you hope that maybe one day on a Saturday morning, you know, you guys will walk into the gym and it'll be college game day, and your campus, your student section, your fans will get a chance to let all eyes of college basketball be upon you. And just to think that it's in Auburn, Alabama, it does tell you how far we've come.
Coach, I was just there, man. People are fired up about your team. Look, I'm sure you want every seat sold every day, but just kind of being there in the dinner, people are having – there's no hangover from the Final Four. It's a fun basketball place, man. Congratulations.
Dan, thanks. It's a great college town, and they call it the prettiest little village on the plains for a reason. And having been there now, I understand why football in a smaller school is able to compete as a top 10 program. I understand now why our baseball program goes to the World Series, or why swimming and diving and golf, and it's just a really cool place that does academics in the South and sports and college sports with a great passion and a great interest. And it's just that in basketball, it's been a while since we've been competitive. You know, Chris Porter and Cliff Ellis had a run. And of course the legendary Sonny Smith and those great teams with Barkley and Person and this is probably the third biggest run, I think, that Auburn's had in the last, 40 years.
So how did it happen? Seriously. I mean, like, I look at your team and I always say recruiting's about not seeing where a guy is, but where a guy's going. And I really believe that when you coach to every level like you have, evaluation is important. But how did you get this thing from where it was? I remember sitting at the table in the CAF, and you're looking at me going, I don't know, Auburn, I went there. How did you get from there to where you are right now?
Well, Seb, I appreciate the asking, because we did sit in the couch, and it wasn't so much about whether it was Auburn. It was about whether it's back into coaching. It was whether my family was willing to, get me back up again and get married to, a program in a university, and a job. So the bottom line is, number one, you got to jump in with both feet like it's the last job you'll ever have. And that's how you have to approach every job in coaching. I think basketball-wise, what we did was we came in with the guys that we had. And it wasn't about, well, we're going to wait till we get our players. We're going to wait till we get our team. No, those guys, the minute I became coach, they were my guys. Now, we weren't very talented, and we struggled to win. But you know, the first year, we managed to win 3 games in the SEC tournament and played a Kentucky team with a couple of walk-ons. And the tallest guy at starting was 6'5". And all of a sudden, people said, you know what? They're going to play hard. They may not be very good, but they're going to play hard. And that was the thing that opened the door to some recruits. Austin Wiley, whose parents both went to Auburn and were great players at Auburn, happened to be sitting right there as a high school sophomore or a junior. And all he needed to see was us play hard and be competitive. The support from the community came. He signed. And really, truly, the rest is sort of a dominoes of other good players, wanting good players, playing in that environment, playing in the SEC. We made some good decisions in recruiting on some, we don't have McDonald's All-Americans, but guys like Jared Harper and Bryce Brown and, Anthony McLemore, guys not recruited by hardly anybody, little underside, little this or that. And they became really good players. And that's why we are where we're at today.
Coach, talk about this year's team. I know it's not last year's team. I know you lost guys, but this is a really good team that looks a lot like your teams, man. It's fun to watch.
Well, Dan, it was great having you Saturday against Iowa State. And, we did look a lot in the like last year's team, because you and I talked before the game. I said, gosh, we're just not shooting it very well. But that doesn't mean we're not going to continue to take those shots. And we made some shots, which helped things. And then it is an older team, like Seth said. All these guys have been in backup roles, supporting roles. But they didn't transfer just because they weren't starters. They got older. They got a little better. And then this past year, we signed a kid named Isaac Okoro, who is a monster. And he goes from being the most underrated high school player in the country. There aren't 3 or 4 kids anywhere, any high school kids, any freshman in college basketball right now that I would have taken ahead of Okoro a year ago. And he was ranked someplace in the low 40s. And, he just affects the game everywhere with his defense, with his rebounding, with his efficiency, taking the ball to the basket. He's an improved 3-point shooter. And so you add him into the mix, and all of a sudden, we're competitive. Now, you're right. We're not as good as we were last year. And we're not as offensively explosive. But we're coming down the stretch now, and the schedule is going to get tougher. We're at Ole Miss tonight, and then we host Kentucky. We go to Arkansas and host LSU. I'd venture to say this week we're going to find out just how good we really are.
I have to admit, we were watching that game, Dan, that you were calling against Iowa State, and we just announced that we're coming to Auburn for game day.
And there were a bunch of people in that room rooting like, oh, come on, let's go, baby. and Iowa State made that run in the end. And you had literally guys screaming at the television going, what are they doing? But
we had a 14-point lead that we gave away. They made some shots. We made some really bad plays. But you know what? Javon McCormick is, he played 10 minutes a game last year as a junior. And now he's got to close. Now he's got to, finish games, start games, close things out. So it is. Look, it is definitely a process. It is a learning process.
But having the seniors, I mean, like, which is so rare right now. But like this team, it's their time. I mean, how do you coaching seniors is hard because it's their last time through the door. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard. How's this team been to coach? Because we all know, seniors, sometimes they have one foot in, one foot out. They're worried about what the future holds. How do you keep them in the moment?
Yeah, it's great, Seth. Listen, it's all about making history, and that's why you go to Virginia Tech, not necessarily North Carolina, because at North Carolina they win it every year. They win it every year. And I know, Dan, when you were at Indiana, it was at a time when Indiana was winning it all the time and kind of supposed to win it. Championships were great. But it was just another year on a banner, and you're supposed to do it. At places like Auburn, you're not. And so our seniors right now are the winningest seniors of ever in the history of Auburn basketball over a four-year period. If we can get to a certain number, 20-something, whatever it's going to be, they will be the winningest of the one-year, two-year, three-year, and four-year. And that's worth working for. This basketball team tonight has a chance to what? Get to what? I don't even know what we are. 17-2, whatever. We have a chance to get there tonight. Is that not worth putting every individual, accomplishment aside for another couple of months? And so it's really been easy. These guys are locked in to trying to make history and trying to write their own identity. Look, last year's team wrote a lot of checks. These guys are having to cash. Like Dan Todd, the Final Four, the Hangover. They're all gone. I mean, five of those kids are gone. And these kids are having to live up to that. Well, they want to make their own history. And they know they can't do it unless they play together and play as a team.
Hey, Coach, specific to on the court, you mentioned that you guys are making shots in the first half, second half not so much. Taking shot making out of it, when your team is playing well, what are you doing?
We're scoring in transition and putting pressure on what's the hardest thing to do, and that is get back and get matched up. So the willingness to be able to go in there and attack. The second thing we're doing is defensively, we're making it difficult for you to just run your stuff. We're not letting you change sides of the floor. We're not trying to not let your best players beat us. I thought we did a great job on Halliburton, a great guard for Iowa State, by making sure that if they decided to put him in a ball screen, he was going to see, four arms and four legs and four eyes and a lot of bodies, and we're going to make him make other guys beat us. I think that would be one thing as far as our scouting. My assistant coaches do a phenomenal job, I think. Game planning. It's not like we play everybody the same way every night. We try to play everybody the way we think we can, that they struggle. What are you not very good at? That's how we're going to try to play you on that particular night. We're not good enough to simply impose our will. We've got to be able to do things differently. And then I think the biggest adjustment we've made from last year this year is last year we were the best three-point shooting team in college basketball, maybe the second best in the history of college basketball behind that Villanova National Championship team. We don't shoot as well, so we got to get downhill. You saw Simmer Dowdy getting downhill, Javon McCormick, Isaac Okoro getting downhill. Now, if we can get Austin, do a better job getting Austin Wiley deep touches and having him finish, that would be one more piece to being more efficient offensively. And then you put those things together, give yourself a fighting chance.
That fighting chance. So you've got Ole Miss tonight. All right. You've obviously got Kentucky Saturday where they're selling standing room only seats or spots. By the way, I better have a seat. I'm not standing on some damn spot this weekend.
Are you bringing Jake?
Jake's just right here because I'm in Zoom to groom. We got the Grove Bark in. I mean, Jake's right here next to me. Jake, you want to go to the Grove Bark in? Oh, he's getting up. He looks pretty excited. I don't know. But Jakester might make an appearance. He's going to be at some spa, whether it's the Grove Bark Inn or somewhere here in Avon. I'm not sure. But he's not going to Oxford today. And So you've got Ole Miss. The Pavilion's going to be rocking. You guys now become a big game on someone's schedule. I mean, like, you go to the Final Four. It's a league game. They're coming off a win against Georgia. You know, now they've got Auburn, last year's Final Four team. How do you get your team to stay in the moment and not get past this Saturday? Because, I mean, you know, that quote-unquote trap game.
You're
one of the great motivators in our game. Like, what's your message to your team today?
Again, it's real simple. You know, we're like 4-15 in our last 19 visits here. Seth, you and Ravi had the game last year. Ole Miss outplayed us. It was the opening of the SEC season a year ago. And so I think the biggest thing that probably is the hardest adjustment for the kids is there's such a big price on our head. In other words, if we're a net 19 or wherever we are on the net, this game is more valuable to Ole Miss than the game even at Georgia because of the math. And so, sure, you know, when we went to Florida or we went to Alabama, I mean, those coaches are saying, look, this is the season. We got to get, and they're not that good. I mean, they're good, but they're beatable. And so that's the great challenge. It's not about overlooking Ole Miss. It's not about the weekend. It really truly isn't. It's just the fact that, look, my team's a little better than Ole Miss, but we're not a lot better. We're a little better and we're maybe a little deeper. But you know, and so therefore, this was going to play the game, and it's really more about us. It's about us taking care of the basketball. It's about us getting better shots. It's about us finishing through contact. It is kind of driving me crazy a little bit nationally, how you know, they're just letting defenders kind of just jump in front of guys taking the ball to the basket, and there's a lot of contact, I think, that may be being initiated by the offensive players, but these defenders are not in legal guarding position. This contact, it's not a complaint because it's not just against Auburn. It's sort of a national thing. You watch the Texas Tech Kentucky game late, and it was such a wonderful basketball game, really physical. But gosh, it was really hard to score because guys were getting to the rim, and they let both teams, you know, kind of play through that contact.
What's your thought on the SEC?
It's not as great as it was a year ago. Last year, how about this? Last year, there were four teams that were clearly good enough to get to the Final Four. I mean, we were the fourth best team in the league because LSU was dominant. They won the regular season. Kentucky, you know, they had three lottery guys and a tremendous, great team. I was one of the better teams he's had. And Tennessee, all year long, they were number one. I mean, we're number one all year long. I mean, right? And then there's Auburn and Mississippi State. You know, you had, you know, Weatherspoon to the group they got right now and a couple of the pieces. Mississippi State was really good. Anyways, I don't know that the league is as strong at the top as it was a year ago. But what's different a little bit is obviously the middle and the bottom of the league is really competitive. You know, Alabama, they got dudes. I mean, look, Kyra Lewis and John Petty, I mean, those guys were great, highly recruited kids and really good players. And Herb Jones and Alex Reef. I tried to get all those kids at Auburn. They all said no to me and went to Alabama. And Nate Oates is doing a great job. They're playing great defense. They're playing fast. Look at the job Eric Musselman's doing at Arkansas, undersized and spreading it and shooting it. You know, you guys know what a good job Will Wade does. And they're unbelievably talented team and athletic. Kentucky is still Kentucky. You know, the league is really good. It's really balanced. It just may not be, you know, quite as strong at the top. And you know, Mike.
Yeah, but in relation to
he got some guys.
Yeah, but in relation to the field, it is as strong because the field isn't as strong as it was in the past. Don't you agree with that?
I do. I agree that you know, like when we talk about there are no great teams. I don't, you know, there are some great teams and there'll be some great teams by the time it's all said and done because teams don't just start. Some teams start great and they wither, you know, other teams become great. And I thought we were one of those teams last year. We became a great team. My gosh, Seth, you saw us last year, start of the SEC season. And, you know, we had a few pieces, but we weren't. And by the time it was all said in March, oh my gosh, that team really came together. I think what makes it fun for you guys and for all of us that love college basketball is just pay attention. and don't lose your locker room, because you know what? There's going to be about 25 teams, maybe 30 teams this year that are capable of making a run because of the fact that, you know, the difference between the great ones and the good ones is not that much.
And isn't that a great point? Don't lose your locker room. That's as important as anything in college basketball today.
No, it is. And and I don't think it's ever about getting too high, but you just can't get too low. You know, again, I was very proud of our team last week. You know, we got smashed at Alabama and Florida and really got it taken to us as the fourth, you know, ranked fourth in the country, you know, big prize on our head. We just couldn't handle it. We couldn't respond. Came home, and even though it was home, we played well against South Carolina. We played well against Iowa State, shot 50% in both of those games, roughly speaking. And now we're back on the road. And now, you know, now the schedule turns up. So how much better did we get, you know, this week? What did we learn? And how much did we grow? And can we keep our locker room?
Coach Pearl, thank you so much. I know everyone's pulling at you. Thank you for spending some time with us on a game day, and we're excited to be there on Saturday. I will text you after your game tonight about the potential pop-up. How's this, Dan? We're going to try to do a pop-up game day, mini game day, coach-to-coach show somewhere on campus because the people, the good people of Auburn, just aren't excited enough yet.
They demand it.
Well, anytime I get an opportunity to be in the greatest show in college basketball, you know, the greatest podcast in college basketball.
The world's greatest podcast.
Too good to pass up.
Yeah. The great Bruce Pearl. Thank you so much. You're the best.
Thanks, guys. War Eagle.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, we got a War Eagle. Is that the addition of Eddie O with Go Tigers?
Oh, my gosh. Everybody does that, right? Isn't that the new thing?
Go Tigers. I love it. I walk around the house going, "Hey, Jake, go Tigers."
Hey, Seth. So yesterday I check in. Last night I get off the plane. I go to, and I haven't talked to anybody. I'm just sitting on a plane, right? Lincoln, Nebraska. I get the, go to rent a car place, small airport. And I goes, "Hey, Dan," behind the counter. I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Anybody ever told you you sound like Coach O?" I go, "Well, no, but I just haven't talked in a while." And I said, "Wait a second." And I turned and I hocked up a big old loogie out of my throat. And I came back to him and I said, "Hey, do I sound like him now?" And he goes, "No, you don't." I go, "Okay, good."
But, so,
yeah. Coach O.
I love that. That guy, every time I hear it, that guy cracks me up. Go Tigers.
Does he sound like LSU?
Oh,
holy cow. He's the best.
Oh, my goodness.
Good for him.
I mean, unbelievable. How about Bruce? Unbelievable. Dude's unbelievable.
And they're good, and you guys are going to have a great time at game day. Great time.
Oh, that's especially, you know what? I mean, last week was okay. I mean, it was, you know, going there in a tough situation, going to Kansas, and, you know, Reese Davis's interview with Bill Self was phenomenal because he didn't back down. We had to talk about some things and, you know, state our opinions, and it is what it is. Some people agreed, some disagreed, but this thing's going to be this is going to be Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey. This is going to
This is going to
be an event. I mean, you know, we were fortunate when I was at Tech to host one game day, and it's just that when you go to a place that hasn't had it and can appreciate it, and you know, it's not, you know, second nature. I mean, there's only eight of those things, man. So I mean, like when you get one of those eight, you know, if you've never had it before, it's a big deal. Now, you know, like you go to Duke, Duke and Carolina and Kentucky and those places, they're great. But when it's, you know, when it's your first time to have it, it becomes a more of an event for sure. And we're gonna have a great time.
Yeah.
We're going to have a great time. So here's the deal. Let's go through some teams and let's break some teams down and kind of get a feel for where you think some of these teams are at. Does that make any sense?
Yes, let's do it.
Tell, are you going to throw some teams out at us, and we're going to talk about their strengths and weaknesses, or are we just going to go at it back and forth?
I can throw some teams out for you if you want.
Yeah, let's bring you into the pod. Let's go, baby.
Yeah,
come on,
man.
All right. Yeah, here we go. We've just
we
upgraded this bad boy.
Well, first one I want to hear about the Butler Bulldogs. I watched them survive a game against Marquette on Friday night, and they look good, but they're definitely flawed.
Yeah, Christian David is out for the year, and he's a kid that has been good enough to make a game winner earlier in the year, earlier in conference season. I think they are very good. I think they are very tough. I don't think they're overly athletic. I don't think that they are the kind of – they're going to play close games against good teams. And that's – you know, hey, you win them, you're great. But they're not overly athletic. And they're not the kind of team that can dominate you with quickness. Great closer. He was unbelievable down the stretch against Marquette. Kamar Bald. Unbelievable, my man.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but they're just not. They're a really good, tough, sound basketball team that isn't going to overpower you with athleticism. And in tournament play, they're going to play close games, period, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're not Virginia from last year, but the field isn't Virginia, but they played a slow tempo. They're good defensively. Like Kamar Baldwin, he's going to go right and get to a middle game, which I thought was great. And just, I mean, he made two shots, the pull up and then the right hand layup. Ridiculous. I do think though, the one thing I do think is they make it hard for the other team's best player. You know what I mean? Like that, they made life miserable for Howard, life miserable. And he didn't realize that. And he continued to try to chase. Now, I think the one concern for me, is they've got a very, very small margin of error. And I don't know who else. They were playing without Thompson the other day, so you have a better feel there. But who else can go make a play when they need one besides Baldwin? And I don't know if you need another guy besides him, because that dude, he was unfazed by the moment at the end of that game.
Yeah, you know, I do think McDermott can make a shot. They're inside. As I mentioned, Christian Daniel has hit a winner. Aaron Thompson is a terrific. He's like Ronald Norad was when they went to the Final Four twice. Great off-ball defense. It's a great point, Seth. Tucker
needs someone to get him a shot, right?
I mean, yeah.
Pretty tough, though.
Seth, I think their bigs are tough. Really, really tough. Are they guys that are going to go jump over you? No, but they're going to get position and score around you, through you, that kind of stuff. I don't know. I mean, look, Seth, I'm telling you, if I'm playing them, maybe McDermott's going to have to hit a three to beat me, but I'm not letting Baldwin anywhere near the Kobe Bryant spot. You know, that elbow
all
remember. Yeah.
Going to his right hand.
Do it. Yeah. I'm not letting him do it. And maybe that's what happens. Maybe teams, you know, really get after him and it opens up a three for McDermott or it opens up something for Tucker.
All right, what's our next one?
Let me throw another one at you. Since you guys are letting me speak, I got to bring up my Maryland Terrapins. They grinded out a win against Indiana. My guy Jalen Smith flexing on Assembly Hall, got the Hoosiers
all
right.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Act like you've been there before. Come on, Jalen. I understand having fun.
He's 19.
Mark Turgeon's head omics exploded at the end of that game. Did you see Mark running over him and grabbing him? It almost exploded that he was running and doing that thing. Here's my deal. And like just even in league play, like I think Maryland is really talented, but they can't do the one thing you got to be able to do to win. Like they can defend and all that shit. I don't trust them making shots. Oh, like we're talking about an NCAA tournament. Can they make shots over 2 weekends? I just don't see it. I mean, they go too many times with long periods of times where they cannot make a shot and score. You do that in a tournament where the pressure is greater. And I think eventually it's going to catch up, whether it's in the first half or the second half. They just find ways where they absolutely get stuck offensively. I think they need to play faster, more ahead of the defense, so they can play more on instinct. I think the more they get stuck in the half court, the more difficult it is, because it just seems like they don't get a good enough shot and when they're in the half court.
Jalen Smith, first and foremost, I think he did nothing wrong. I think Jalen Smith, the video that I saw that has since been deleted of him going over to this particular group of idiots at Indiana on the front row who have for years taunted kids. I heard it in 08 when I was the head coach. In fact, I told him one to go blank himself when I was coming on the court. These are penny millionaires at Indiana that think there's something, and I know exactly who the two guys are that, it looked to me, now I could be wrong, and Smith maybe didn't go and did more than I saw, but, I applaud Jalen Smith for doing that, because the 250-something-year-old guys that taunt kids every game need to have that happen. In terms of Turgeon, I did think his head was going to explode.
It was unbelievable.
He came over in a sprint. He did not want a Kansas State situation. Hey, you know, it's happened before in Assembly Hall. Everybody loves Brian Cardinal, right? Brian Cardinal's the greatest guy ever. Brian Cardinal took a towel and wiped the assembly floor, danced on the logo there. But for whatever the reason, Brian Cardinal never caught the hell that Jalen Smith has, and a lot of it is to do with the social media. So, look, I got no problem as an Indiana, 17-year Indiana player and coach. Jalen Smith, particularly at the two guys or three guys that he did it at, good for you. Maryland needs to play faster. Maryland in half court is a bit of a disaster. Wiggins hit a monster shot against Indiana. They ran great action to get a bucket for Jalen Smith, which ended up being the game winning. But it's few and far between, man. That team, I've done three quarters of their game. Me and Johnny Holiday are the official announcers of Maryland, and I've been saying it forever. Push, go, go, go. Mark Turgeon knows his team better than we know. I'll defer to him slightly. Maryland needs to push, and Maryland needs to go, Seth Greenberg.
I agree.
And
with you.
If they do, you're going to see Wiggins make. You're going to see Ayala play better. You're going to see Morsell go to the rim. If they don't, they're going to get stuck, and everybody's going to continue to be angry. But that was a good winning, and I applaud Jalen Smith. I don't care. Maybe I'm a bad guy, but I don't care. I applaud him because those guys are.
I have no problem. We had a similar situation at Duke one year. And like, to me, I don't have a problem with it, because I think kids need to celebrate. Taunt is one thing. Celebrate is another.
Let me ask you quick. Can I stop you right there? Let me ask you a question. Indiana fans are, well, Jalen Smith needs to be the bigger man and be more mature. What? You got, now these dudes that sit in the front row, I call them penny millionaires. These are Indiana rich guys, you know. These guys are guys that claim to have played sports at Indiana. Why are they sitting there yelling at kids? I mean, the bigger man, my ass. You get excited, you go and win, and you have some idiots yelling and screaming at y'all game. I got no problem with it. But why are we saying the kid should be the bigger man? What about some 50-year-old something dads? Shouldn't they be the bigger man?
Well, that goes back to, that goes back to the Seth Greenberg philosophy on anything like that and social media. You have these guys that have pictures with their, you know, their young kids and grandchildren and, you know, are quoting scriptures, and then they're like,
right,
MFing you. I mean, you have an adult who has children, maybe a student at Indiana, or maybe a grade schooler that they might, you know, tote around, and then all of a sudden they walk into this arena and they act like a bunch of idiots.
Right.
So if someone acts like an idiot and is, you know, in a lot of ways, you say, well, you should be the bigger man, and it's not that easy. It's not that easy. My
dog, and it's one of the reasons you just had
me.
A great. One of the reasons Jalen Smith just had a big game, because he's tough and competitive in an environment where you had to be. And all of a sudden, hey, the game's over. You're just supposed to turn that off. There's a video that I saw. If you turn the volume up, before Smith ever does anything. Indiana's changed, by the way, and I blame all you East Coast guys. So don't at me about that.
Oh,
either.
Don't at me on that.
Oh, it's so true. The president sold out.
Have you looked in the mirror lately? Have you looked in the mirror?
Yeah, East Coast and Northern Chicago. You guys have ruined Indiana, but I digressed. Anyway, let's go to the next team. I got a soapbox going here.
Well, this next team might provide you an additional soapbox, but tell me why the West Virginia Mountaineers can't win the Big 12, boys.
Huh. They got to go through Baylor, probably. I mean, West Virginia, I love West Virginia, by the way. And Hugs, how about Hugs tying Adolph Rupp?
Wow.
Awesome. Hugs needs to be in the Hall of Fame.
Why?
He is a Hall of Fame. Why? Are you kidding
me?
He's taken bad jobs and won. He has won 800-plus games at every level. Whether it's Walsh or Akron or Cincinnati or Kansas State or West Virginia.
You know what? All right, can I stop? Can I answer that? I agree with you on Hugs because of that, but I don't think coaches should be in the Hall of Fame.
Until they've done coaching.
No, I don't think they should be. I mean, Roy Williams isn't having a great year. And why? Because they don't have players. I don't think they should be. I really don't. I don't think they should be
just a coaches Hall of Fame, which is second.
Yeah, if you want to make a coaches Hall of Fame.
What about the leadership that a coach has to, you know, deal with? We always talk about, you know, they're more than just a coach. They're ambassadors. They're, you know, mentors.
Yeah, I think that's gone a little sideways. I'm not sure I buy any of that anymore. I think coaches in this day and age, yeah, they do all that kind of stuff, but I think money has corrupted.
Well, look, tricky players make tricky coaches. I mean, we all know that. I mean, like, you're only as good as the dude you're coaching. I mean,
I'm just saying, Steve Kerr's the greatest national philosopher, coach. Yeah, right? How's he doing this year without players? I'm just saying. Like, to me, Boeheim, Hall of Fame coach. I mean, what he's doing this year. Anyway, let's answer the question because that's another soapbox.
I don't think West Virginia wins the Big 12, but I do think that West Virginia's a team in the NCAA tournament you do not want to see. You can't simulate what they do. They get extra possessions. They get offensive rebounds. They turn you over. They've got a style of play. I always believe that in the NCAA tournament, if you win your first game, the second day in a short turnaround, if you have a unique style of play that's difficult to prepare for, it's a huge advantage. I think West Virginia is that team.
I just like them. I just like how they play. I think they're tough. I mean, obviously. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's no
they
reason
turn it
they
over
can't.
A bunch, too.
Yeah. The only reason they can is because every year you pick Kansas to lose the Big 12, and finally last year.
I don't do it every year. You sound like I'm a hater. I hate Kansas. I hate Duke. Who else do I hate?
I didn't say you hate it. I just said you bet that every week, and next thing you know, or every year, and next thing you know, they do it once, and we all got to hear about it. Kansas wins the Big 12 because that's what they do.
You've lost your mind.
Oh, today. Man.
Go ahead, T. Lay another one on us while we're pontificating.
All right. So do we think the Dayton Flyers, do they roll to a league title? And then what might prevent them from getting out of that first weekend, possibly making it to a Final Four? Because they look really good right now.
They're really good.
Well, go ahead. What's going to prevent them?
Aristotle, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, soapbox boy right here. I think they can definitely get out of the first weekend, but I do think this, when I watch them, and Obi Toppin is, I will give Seth Greenberg great credit for the Obi Toppin's emergence, just like Ja Morant last year. Seth Greenberg is the new Mark Adams, king of the mid-major, although Dayton's more of a major. But anyway, I think Dayton's good. I think Dayton's very good. I do think this, though. You know, whenever people say to me, get out of the first weekend, second weekend, Elite Eight type team, sure, the answer is yes, absolutely. But it you got to beat other really good teams. You know what I mean? So what could stop
them?
You're good, but, you know, so's Davison, right? I mean, so's some, you know, you match up with Butler in the second round. And I think sometimes we forget that. But there's nothing better than – I love watching Obi Toppin play because I think he's got a feel for passing. I think they're a very good team. I think Anthony Grant's a terrific coach. And it's – you know, we've said this on this podcast, Seth. It's one of the great underrated basketball communities in the country. So, sure, they're a second weekend team, but they could also be one and done because they're going to have to play a really good team, and they're not that dominant type crew.
You know, the interesting thing about them, and you made a great point. It's like in the tournament, all right, they're going to have a good seed, but they're going to play a quote unquote low mid major probably in the first round and probably a pretty good team in the second round. A team that's won probably 25 to 30 games. Once you get in a tournament, if you've got a pretty good team, that second round game, you're playing against a team that expects to win. I think that's one thing that, you know, like sometimes are they upsets? Aren't they upsets? They're playing against a team that has a good feel for them. I really like them because I think they've got really, really good blend guys like the Mikesell kid. He's a perfect fit guy. The Landers kid, perfect fit guy. They got an elite guy that's a matchup nightmare that, like, Dan, you hit around it. He's a terrific passer. Yeah. Like, he handles double teams better than anyone. They've got a bunch of dudes that can score. I love teams that play with 2-point guards because they don't turn it over. They've got lockdown defenders, and they play fast, and they play with a really, really good flow. Like they come at you, they don't reset. They just kind of stay in what they're doing. I think they're really, really good. I mean, like really good. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they were in the Final Four. I would be shocked if they didn't make it to the second weekend. I'd be shocked if they didn't make it to the second weekend.
Wow.
Shocked. Strong. Shocked. Strong. Especially this year.
Yeah. Well, especially if they make it to the first weekend next year, will you be shocked?
When Obi Toppin leaves, it'll be harder. I would think that, you know, because there goes you. That obviously.
All then, right. I'm just being a smart ass.
Anthony Grant will not be a Hall of Fame coach.
No Hall of Fames. No Hall of Fame.
Let's do one more
last
here.
One.
We don't give the Pac-12 a lot of love here. It's a sneaky tight race at the top of the conference, but do the Oregon Ducks pull away here? Or is Colorado, are they hot on their heels? Is that anything to keep an eye on?
Ooh, look at you throwing out the Colorado on us. I like that. I think Colorado's legit, but I think Oregon's got more ways to beat you. Like, I think Colorado, Tyler Bay and McKinley Wright, you know, Batty, those three guys they shoot it. They're very, very well coached. I just look at Oregon. I just think Oregon's got dudes and Duarte's playing really, really well right now. They've got a good closer in Peyton Pritchard. They've got depth in their front court. Justin is a very good offensive rebounder and Foley's going to get better. I think Oregon has a chance to be really good. And the Greenberg philosophy, we got two lottery picks on Washington and they will not play in the NCAA tournament, or will Anthony Edwards. And my philosophy once again is 100% true. Thank you. I'll drop the mic.
Mic dropped. First and foremost, I'm driving home from the airport late the other night and I'm listening to the Colorado somebody game and the announcer for the Colorado Buffs, the play-by-play guy, is one of the two or three best play-by-play guys I've ever heard in my life, along with Jim Durham and Mark Boyle. Just, I wanted to sit in my car and listen to this guy call a game. I don't know who he is, but man, is he good. I gotta believe Oregon wins this 17-4. The league is actually, when you look at it record-wise, you've got four teams in there that only have four losses. One of them is never talked about, and that's the Stanford Cardinal. You talk about having, Seth, you talk about having first round draft choices. Let me ask you a question. Arizona, 13-6, 3-3 in the league. Haven't won a game on the road all year. All year, boss. Do they make the tournament?
They've got to win some games.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. And the problem is when you get in a league like that, if you don't beat Colorado, if you don't beat Oregon, Stanford to an extent is a quad one win. And where are you getting your wins? I mean, that's a big thing right now.
I know.
I mean, where are you getting your wins? And, you know, Nico Mannion's great and Josh Green's great. And, you know, Zeke Nagy's been, you know, obviously, phenomenal, but eventually you've got to win games. And I think what happens is those young teams, when they face a little adversity, if you don't have someone in your locker room, and I thought Bruce Pearl, who was on our podcast earlier, made a great point. Is like, you know, who's coaching your locker room? You know, you got to keep is your locker room able to deal with it? You start losing some games. And now if you know you're one and done, and I know people think I'm nuts with this. If you know you're one and done, are you all in on winning to win? Or are you more concerned now with 2 months, 6 weeks, 8 weeks from now?
I never had that problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this. Only one and done I ever coached, Eric Gordon, was in on winning. So I'm going to say
you think that if you're not at Duke or Kentucky or maybe Kansas, I mean, it's amazing how these programs have had a hard time navigating this with great players.
You said it before. I think this is our fourth, I think, Greenberg philosophy of the podcast. You said before, one and done on your team kills you. And that is a philosophy, by the way, by which I agree. And if we can get to a 5 Greenberg philosophy podcast, that'd be awesome. But the one and done thing, you said it, man. A lot of guys aren't going to be playing in the NCAA tournament that are one and done. No question. And
because the best team's playing that.
Yeah.
teams, yeah. guys that give up a little bit and compete and are used to competing, compete for each other and play hard. And that's the amazing thing about what Cal's been able to do. Like, you know, like, and like, you know, Khalil Whitney, he leaves and supposedly it wasn't his real choice. It was more family pressure. But like the one interesting thing is the guys that have left Kentucky, none of them ever played in the NBA. Not one guy.
I know. He told me that on my radio show. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, it's, but guys that stick through it usually end up pretty good. So,
and Cal's dealing with Indiana's a beautiful state, man. He's got Keon Brooks, and there's some idiot AAU coach that is just ripping Cal left and right because Keon Brooks doesn't play. It's amazing to me, these guys in our great state of Indiana. And, you know, to that reason I bring that point up, is because if you just do what Cal wants to do, whether it's this year, next year, it's going to work out for you. We're seeing it with Nick Richards, period. I mean, jeez.
Ashton Higgins, Nick Richards, today. PJ Washington. How about our – we got to finish with this, all right? We're not going to talk Kentucky because we talked a little bit.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, about – I guess it was almost 2 years ago. Is that right? A year and a half, whatever it is. My man Dan Dockett said, this guy is going to be the most improved player in the country. Now – here's the thing. I'm not sure you ever said next year. You right. just said right. he was going to be the most improved player.
Right.
I mean, so you were talking about this year.
Said I was just talking.
But it's cool to see. Like, it's cool to see. It's cool to, you know, like, here's a great thing about whomever it is. It's cool to see a light bulb go on for a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like people understand, you know, there's so much pressure on these kids to get there quick. And Nick Richards had a great post-game interview. And he talked about, you know, some people think just because you come to Kentucky, you need to be one and done. This is what he said. He said, this has been the best 3 years of my life. I love being in college. And you know what? Most guys allow themselves to enjoy it. Like, it's a shame that some kids have one foot in, one foot out. They never get a chance to really appreciate and enjoy because of all the static around them, all the people saying you got to get out, all the people saying whatever, you're getting exploited or this or that, that some kids never take the time to say, man, this is really good.
Right.
And Nick Richards flat out just said, I'm having the time of my life. This has been the best 3 years of my life, of my life. More kids need to embrace that. That is the end. I'm dropping the mic. I mean, like, I'm off my soapbox for the day. I'm out.
Yeah, all Greenberg out. That means the world's greatest podcast is out. Thanks to everybody for listening.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.